Eric Metaxas here. Please join me in a life-saving mission to set Sudanese slaves free through Christian Solidarity International. Since 1995, CSI has freed more than 100,000 women and children from years of bondage and abuse. Your $250 gift frees, feeds, and heals these captives and sets them on a path to a new life in freedom. Please help us free another slave now. Call 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, or click the CSI banner at MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, gang. I'm talking to Mallory Millett, who is the sister of the late Kate Millett. We've talked about that on previous programs. I think YouTube scrubbed those because it's very divisive stuff. We don't want that, you know, where the kids can watch it.
But you're a menace.
Mallory,
you're a menace.
I know. I'm the most dangerous man in America. I want to talk to you about Bradley Cooper, that there's a more current name. Tony Bennett. You did know Tony Bennett. Now,
very
Tony Bennett
well.
Is, of course, still with us. He's doing like a gig with Lady Gaga in Radio City, I think, this month or sometime soon.
Uh-huh. I knew Tony. I know Tony very well.
You know him?
We really love
Can
each
other.
Can
you get me a seat at Radio City?
No.
Can you get me backstage to meet Tony? Look, I'm not going to tell the world that he's been wearing a toupee since the 60s, okay? I can keep a secret. So how do you know Tony?
Well, again, this is through Minda. Minda had...
What am I talking to you for? Where's Minda?
Minda was in a romance with Tony Bennett that lasted 4 years also. She was with
you
Michael Caine for 4 years.
You make her sound like, I don't know, like a
And then
a
she was with Michael Caine for 4 years.
All right.
Well, she's just somebody who runs around in that crowd. She's been in nothing but that crowd.
Oh, it's obvious that she runs around. But let me ask you, how did you know Tony Bennett? And what kind of he seems like a nice man.
Oh, Tony is an angel. Tony is absolutely an angel. You would so approve of Tony. He is a wonderful...
Even I?
Yes, you would approve of Tony. Tony is a truly good man. He's an absolute angel from God. He truly is. Thomas and I love Tony deeply. He's
so you
so
still
wonderful.
Know him?
Yeah, I mean, we don't really see him, but if I ever do, sometimes we run into each other places.
Right.
And he is so warm and loving and wonderful to us. You can see that he's got deep affection for us.
Just well, it's kind of an amazing thing that he's still in his 90s, can sing very well.
Very
it's an astonishing thing to hear him sing because you think, because most people, I mean, you know, folks like Elton John, they don't have the voice they did a few decades ago, or they haven't maintained it or whatever, but he clearly can sing extremely beautifully.
Well, when we first met him, his career was in the toilet. His career was absolutely in the ditch.
This must have been like the 80s.
He had no career. When was that, honey? That was the 80s, right? Yeah.
Well, he had a huge resurgence, obviously.
Yes, that was because he got his son to manage him. And we were with him in the middle of all of that. He couldn't get arrested. He couldn't work. He was very desperately upset about it. And I would say, Tony, you know, come on, you're Tony Bennett, whatever, you know. So what if you're not working right now? And he'd say, Mallory, I have a $10,000 a month nut I've got to come up with. And this is in the 80s, which is like saying $25,000 an hour or something.
Yeah,
He'd say, every month, I have people to pay. I have musicians. I can't lose my crew and all the people who work for me.
Maybe
and
I
I've
could
got
get
to come
his
up
son
with all this money every
to manage
month.
My career. Oh. What's his son doing?
Oh, his son absolutely transformed. The minute his son took over his career, it skyrocketed.
Huh.
Absolutely
skyrocketed. Well, I mean, for him to do duets with all these people, including Lady Gaga, I got to say, it's a wonderful thing because it introduces him to the new generation, and I love that. And I love, frankly, one of the things that I like about Lady Gaga is her appreciation for some of the classic singers and actors and actresses. Because, you know, younger performers often have no sense of that.
But I can never get over that both she and Madonna went to the Convent of the Sacred Heart, one of the greatest women's girls'
convent schools. Can I just tell you something?
That
means nothing. It's not a convent school. It's an upper class Manhattan, Upper East Side, rich girls' school with a patina of Roman Catholicism. Let's not kid ourselves.
And they turn out these bizarre people.
Look. Let's not get into it. But let me ask you, what about Bradley Cooper? Because we don't have much time left. How do you know Bradley Cooper? Another amazing actor from the newer generation.
Well, we first met Bradley when he was just a kid. He was a student of my dear friend Elizabeth Kemp. Elizabeth Kemp sort of took over the mantle of Lee Strasberg in a way.
Uh-huh.
Elizabeth Kemp was a gorgeous, drop-dead beautiful girl who I had starred on the stage with several times. She and I both played the original roles. She played the original April, and I played the original Ginger in the, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Get out.
No.
Now, wait a second. You,
I originated
were you in a
the
soap
role of
opera?
Ginger. Yeah, I was in a couple of soap operas.
What are the bigger ones that people would know? We should have started with this.
I was in Another World, and I was in Love of Life.
So you did soaps.
But, yeah, just a bit, you know. I
know. You had a big nut you had to cover every month, all right? Come on.
But,
wow.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how you knew him, and
no,
how did
well,
you?
No, I got to know Bradley because Elizabeth Kemp was a big teacher.
Is she still doing
method.
That?
She just died in 2017, and that's what the Bradley thing is all about, because Bradley started with her when he was a kid. He was about 21 or 22. He went to the Pace University Actor Studio Drama School to get his master's in acting, and Elizabeth was the chair of the drama department at Pace University. So she was my dear friend. She lived floor stores above me. And
let me just ask you, you're just talking about Bradley Cooper. There's another connection to Lady Gaga, because Stephanie Germanotta, which is her real name, she played opposite him in A Star Is
well,
Born.
Well, that was Elizabeth's project. See, so now Elizabeth Kemp is my best friend besides Lisa. The three of us were a trio since the 70s. Just running around getting, and Elizabeth and I were directed by Shelley Winters in plays. She was also very close to Shelley. So Elizabeth and I were as close as two girlfriends could possibly be. And she was sort of the major acting master in New York City. And Bradley came to her as a graduate student, and she began to work with Bradley. And the first times we ever met him, he was just a kid who was running errands for Lizzie. He'd stop at our house to pick up a script or drop off a script. He was always running errands for Lizzie and knocking at her door and saying, I don't want to bother you,
Have you seen any of the A Star Is Born films? Did you see the one with
I've seen them all.
You've seen them all. The one with Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, it's really beautiful.
I hated it.
But except for that.
Yeah.
Except for that. And then the one with James Mason.
That's
oh my gosh.
Great. Judy
Garland.
Judy Garland. That's a great that's fantastic.
I've met Chris Christopherson in the Hippo House at the Munich Zoo. No, the Berlin Zoo.
Wow.
I did meet him, but we didn't get to talk about his career because we were looking at the hippos. That's true. But he was in the one with Barbara Streisand, which I can't even watch.
It's so too weird.
Awful. Anything with Barbara Streisand with a perm in the 70s, I'm out. I'm out. I can't deal with it.
I'm with you.
But the one with James Mason, oh my gosh.
So moving, so touching.
But I'm surprised you didn't like Bradley Cooper and
no.
Lady Gaga.
It was Lizzie's idea that they do that he do A Star Is Born. And they worked on it for quite a while. She made Bradley Cooper. Elizabeth created him as an actor.
Right.
She taught him everything she knew
That's
about
right.
the method.
Without her, he's nobody. I don't care if she's Dame, whatever she is, she needs to come here.
But anyway, Bradley, let's get to the Bradley thing, because it's very...
Oh, we've
also,
only got seconds. Go.
Okay, so anyway, Elizabeth ended up dying in my house.
What?
On September 1st, 2017. She ended up with terrible liver problems, and her liver gave out on her. It's kind of a long story. I'd like to be able to tell the whole thing.
Yeah, well, not today.
But we can't. But she came to our place in Beverly Hills, the place where David Bowie and George Hamilton lived.
Right.
And she came there to die. She wanted to die. She loved our house, and she said, if I have to die anywhere, I want to die there.
Oh, my
gosh.
So
Bradley, who worshipped her, Bradley absolutely, when he did his Actor's Studio, Inside the Actor's Studio thing, all he did the whole night he did the Inside the Actor's Studio thing was talk about Elizabeth and break down in tears about how much he loved her and how she made his career. Well, so when she was dying, we had Bradley and Thomas and I and two other people had the Keeping Elizabeth Alive Committee. And we would meet every day and talk about what are we going to do. We were so desperate to keep her alive. Bradley was paying all the bills. He was over at our house all the time. And he was doing everything he could to make Elizabeth live. But
Mallory, will you and Thomas please come back here?
We'd
love
it.
And we'll have more time. Mallory, thank you.
Thank you so much, Eric. It's so much fun to be with you.
You marry a music man.
Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people, in fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their three-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out.
Hey there, folks. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. As you know, on this program, I never want to talk about anything controversial. We're all about unity on this program. We don't talk about vaccines. We don't talk about the election fraud. We don't talk about those things. We want to unify. And today, in that spirit, I'm interviewing Mark Morano. He has a book out called Green Fraud, and he means that in the best way. Green Fraud. Why the Green New Deal is even worse than you think. Mark Morano, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Eric. I'm happy to be here today. Appreciate it.
The Green New Deal, when I heard about it the first time, I remember it was like when I heard about defund the police. You thought, there are some things that are so astronomically silly that there's no way to comprehend them seriously. You just think, that person's crazy and no one will take it seriously. And then you find out maybe you're wrong. We're living in really crazy times. That's the headline, Mark Morano, because the Green New Deal is just, it's mind bending. It's mind bending to me that anyone could take it seriously. But talk to us about it. You've written a book called Green Fraud. Why is this even worse than we think?
Well, the Green New Deal implies, number one, that we have a climate emergency, climate crisis, that we have 12 years by which to act, and the clock's ticking. I think we're down to just a little over 10 years now. Another one of these tipping points. And by the way, in the book, I trace the first climate tipping point to 1864, where we were warned of climatic excess unless we did something. So these tipping points have been around for centuries, literally. But the Green New Deal, even if we faced a climate emergency, they claim, which we don't even face really measurable climate influence by mankind. I mean, that's the thing. There's hundreds of factors that influence the climate. You can't distinguish them from natural variability. We were probably warmer during the Roman warming period when Jesus was on Earth, when during the time of Jesus Christ was born. And the medieval warming period, we were probably warmer according to peer-reviewed studies.
But didn't it, wait a minute, didn't the world end around that time in the Middle Ages?
That's right. What do you mean by end?
Didn't they have some kind of a climate disaster to wipe out the population? Actually, maybe not, because here we are. I got to tell you, I remember hearing this kind of stuff in the 80s when I was in college. These predictions that were just, you know, really dire predictions. And then time would pass, nothing would happen, and nobody would mention it again. So you do get it is a little bit like the boy crying wolf. But what you just said, to me, the most important piece is that no matter what the weather is doing, you're saying that it's simply not a fact that human activity is the main cause. So what a lot of these people are screaming about, they make it sound like we are all doing something that we could change and that would solve the problem. And we don't know that. So they're asking us to spend many, many billions, trillions of dollars to do something without a clear outcome. Isn't that really the main point?
Yeah, I mean, the gist of this whole climate movement is that humans are driving this catastrophe. We have to act. You have senators like Chuck Schumer who said, had we done more on climate, these hurricanes wouldn't be as bad. Here's what I mean by there's no human influence. On hurricanes, floods, droughts, tornadoes, sea level, there's no human signal, meaning that actually all the extreme weather events, even in the buried in the United Nations reports, even buried in the national climate assessment that the media likes to hype, none of that is on any increasing trend. They're either no trend or declining trends. We had record low hurricanes. We had record low tornadoes. Global droughts are showing no trend. Global floods, no matter what weather event, sea levels are the same levels they were 80 years ago. Obama, a scientist came out, Steve Koonin from the Obama administration, has a whole book out detailing how nothing alarming is going on with the climate. Temperature, you hear about the hottest year. None of that it's within hundredths of a degree difference between previous hottest year records.
Hundreds, but as I mentioned, if we were a degree.
You can't even measure the difference. And it's just within the margin of error. That's the amazing thing. So back to the Green New Deal, just real quick. Even if we face this catastrophe, even if humans were driving it, the Green New Deal, by their own architect's own admission, and people like John Kerry have publicly admitted this multiple times, even if the U.S. went to zero emissions, which isn't even part of the Green New Deal, really, we would have no influence on global CO2 level, let alone potentially global temperature and or climate, because China, India, the rest of the world is continuing to develop, and the Green New Deal would do nothing for emissions, let alone temperature. So there's no cost-benefit analysis. It's basically saying we face an emergency, we have to turn Marxist socialist in order to save ourselves, and that's not going to save anything from a crisis we don't even face.
And obviously, India and China are what? They're about 2.5 billion people, and what is going on in those countries dwarfs what is happening here. So why is the United States always painted as the bellwether when that's just not true?
The United States is picked on. I guess if you go by per capita, we have the largest carbon footprint per person, and that's what's getting them. And the reason, the title of my book is Why the Green New Deal is Worse Than You Think, it's because of the COVID lockdowns. Because just if you go to Climate Depot this week, Eric, I have multiple stories on COVID scientists claiming now is the time to do the same thing for climate. They are openly using the phrase climate lockdowns. We have International Energy Agency. By the way, I'm saying there's no heat. It's not hot because of global warming. I'm here in the Washington, D.C. suburbs. It's a hot day today. But the COVID scientists are pushing the climate lockdowns. International Energy Agency report, from in a peer-reviewed journal, are calling for the shrinking, particularly of Americans. They want to shrink our energy. They want to limit our mobility and travel. They want to take away private automobile ownership. They want to limit our airline flights. They want to radically reduce our energy use. They want to degrow our economy, planned recessions. We are now facing a morphing of the COVID lockdowns to the climate lockdowns.
Okay, I've not heard that before. And if ever you needed proof that there is a socialist Marxist agenda behind this, there we have it. I mean, the idea that they would take a very bad idea with regard to medicine and science and move it over to the climate. On what basis would somebody, again, this is preposterous and we should laugh at it, but on what basis would somebody conceivably be suggesting something like a climate lockdown? Why would somebody stay home to help the climate, theoretically?
Well, literally you'd stay home because if you travel to work, even if you take public transit, you're using energy, you're doing commercialism, you're doing spending. The vision, and it's laid out, I have a whole two chapters in the book on this, on green fraud. The vision is the World Economic Forum, the meet in Davos, Switzerland. And their idea is the wealthy sort of global people, everyone from Prince Charles, John Kerry's all in, the United Nations is all in, Bill Gates, etc., their vision, and it's actually, they produced a video, "You Will Own Nothing and You'll Be Happy." It's a vision of the year 2030 under a Green New Deal style, global, technocratic lockdown of our lives. You, everything you'll want, your rent, food will be delivered to your home by drone. Your business will be conducted on a computer screen. This is their vision, because the idea, they're actually saying, and I quote climate activists in the book, it will be not in under a declared climate emergency, which Joe Biden is being urged to declare in the United States, which would give him emergency powers, much like the blue state Democratic governors. You would only be able to fly when it's, quote, morally justifiable, unquote. You'd have to justify to a government official. This is well thought out. They're talking about maximum speed limits. They're talking about thermostat controls in your home. We're already seeing this happen in Texas with smart thermostat. It's an aspect of basically micromanaging every aspect of your life by an administrative state, because A, we can't handle our own health. B, we can't handle the health of the planet. So we need experts with PhD, master's degree, public health bureaucracy to come in and micromanage every aspect of our life, tell us when we can fly, what we can, when we can drive, where we can go, how long. Just like under COVID, you had stay-at-home orders, curfews, essential services only, no backyard barbecues, no funerals, no weddings. That was the dream of every public health bureaucrat, and moving that to climate is the dream of every climate activist. In fact, John Kerry, Greta Thunberg, the United Nations have all praised COVID lockdowns as incredible parallels to how we should fight climate.
And you know, even better if we'd all just commit suicide. My goodness, how that would really marvelously reduce the carbon footprint. We need to think about that. To save the planet. Now, why would we save the planet? For whom? I don't know, because we'll all be dead. It's almost funny, Mark, because it really is self-defeating. It's a snake, swallowing, biting its own tail, so to speak. It refutes itself when you look at it logically.
It does, but no one looks at it logically. They look at it ideologically, and they look at it emotionally. So that's why when you argue with a climate activist, they're embedded in their head is 97% of all scientists agree. So in their minds, they don't have to know an ounce of climate science. All they need to know is all scientists agree, and you're anti-science. You're a science denier if you disagree. Well, the 97% figure, which you'll hear from Al Gore upped it to 99% recently on CNN, just made up.
Is Al Gore still alive? I thought he was like floating in some kind of a saline tank. We're out of time for this segment, but we need our producers to look to find out, is Al Gore still among the living?
That's right.
The book is Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think, with a foreword by Mark Stein. Holy cow. We'll be right back.
Give a little bit of your love to me.
Hey, folks, have you thought about killing yourself to reduce your carbon footprint? It's something that all serious people are laughing about, and you should too. Green Fraud is the book. Mark Morano, the author. Mark, I don't know what to say. Is Al Gore really still out there someplace? I think of him as kind of a manatee just sort of floating through the culture. He's out there someplace, but nobody knows where.
Well, Al Gore actually has been replaced mostly. Even people like Leonardo DiCaprio have been replaced. They've been replaced by the youth climate activists. And in short, the climate activists couldn't convince adults of a climate crisis, so they went after the children. And hey, they've had a lot of success. They've had kids around the world skipping school, kids suing the government for their climate future, demanding climate action, basically demanding Marxism be imposed in order to safeguard their future of the planet. But Al Gore, first film came out in 2006. And by the way, polar bears were the icon of that film. And polar bears are disappearing. They're disappearing from Al Gore's books and movies because Al Gore never mentioned them in his sequel from 2017 or in his new book, because polar bears are at or near historic population. They never counted so many. So he just conveniently wiped them off the table.
So the polar bears are having the last laugh. That's what you're telling us.
They are. But the thing about Gore is it's so quaint when you look at Gore. But his film came out in 2006. He talked about polar bears and sea level and carbon dioxide. He talked about carbon taxes and cap and trade. Now the whole climate debate has morphed to nuttiness. It's complete wackiness, Eric. People are worried about whether vehicle thefts are going to go up, barroom brawls, whether rapes are going to go up, whether we'll have too many redheaded kids or not enough redheaded kids. Now, NASA scientists are coming out saying that climate change is caused by white supremacy. And until we get rid of white supremacy, we're never going to get rid of our extractive energy supply that's driving the climate crisis. So now the entire climate change debate has been invaded by identity politics. I have a whole chapter in the book on the wackiness of identity politics. You want to solve climate change today? Forget about carbon taxes. They want you to defund the police, and we have Green New Deal activists who want to abolish the police. That's the new climate solution.
What's interesting, though, is how all of these, well, now we call them woke ideologies, they all merge. They kind of, I mean, this is intersectionality at its best. It's kind of like all the crazy stuff somehow migrates together, and so you're always talking about all these different things. In other words, it has nothing to do with science. Somehow now it's related to, you know, all of these other ideologies. So it's almost designed to be purely emotional, to get young people riled up, to tell them really to forget about the facts, except for the bullet points that you want them to know. I mean, the polar bear thing is hilarious. I mean, is it really? I just want to go back for a second. I mean, that was the thing. You said it in 2006 when Al Gore made his mockumentary. You know, the polar bears, they were going extinct. They're swimming. It's sad. There's no ice for them to wear. And you're telling me now the polar bears are making a big comeback.
They are more than they've ever counted. And actually, even paleontologists, others have come out and said, given the history of the Earth's geologic climate, polar bears have survived much worse than they're even predicting with climate change, that there's just no threat. All they would do is move to land and back to ice. They're not under any threat. The population has, I think it's fivefold increase since the 1970s, a lot having to do with the hunting ban. But even just since Al Gore's film, there's been an unbelievable amount of new discoveries of polar bears. There, even indigenous people in the Arctic talk about how they're not endangered. Old tour guides talk about it. I mean, it's incredible. It's now almost universally accepted, but you know how they get you. This is how the climate activists work. When current reality fails to alarm or scare you, they make scarier and scarier predictions of the future. And so they can claim it's more dire than ever for the polar bears. You're like, how? There's more than ever? The Arctic. Well, they'll say, well, our prediction now of the year 2070 is much worse than it was just a few years ago. So that's how they do it. It's a misdirection using these climate models, which don't account for half the variability in nature. And they can basically, doesn't matter what's actually happening in the system, as long as they make a scary prediction, they get funded, they get attention, they get scare reports, and they get lobbying efforts for their solutions like the Green New Deal.
Well, the book is Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. So what are, you know, leftist socialists like AOC proposing? In other words, they're quite seriously proposing these things, and we have a fake president. I don't want to insult the fake president. He's legitimately phony. And the point is that he's in the White House when he's not at his home in Delaware. And he has been sucked in to advocating for some of these harmful socialist policies. I mean, it seems that way. You were alluding to it.
He's a figurehead. I mean, Biden is just sort of, he doesn't even, again, he ceded his entire administration over to these youth climate activists, to Bernie Sanders, to AOC, to write his climate agenda. He's now made every climate agency, every administration agency is administration, a climate agency. And that includes the Pentagon, State Department, Energy Department, you name it, Interior. Climate is first and foremost at their mission. So this is what they're doing. But what the Green New Deal wants to do is like essentially reset, build back better. They want to use the COVID lockdowns now. They're going after our diets. They're going after beef. They're going after any animal products. They're actively pushing for an end to modern farming, so much so that Bill Gates is now the largest landowner of farms in America. Now, don't believe me. This isn't some right-wing conspiracy. I have NBC News. Go to Climate Depot. NBC News did a whole thing on Bill Gates being the world's, America's largest farm landowner. He's now competing and taking away family farms from farmers who can't compete with the likes of Bill Gates. And what's their agenda? Bill Gates is pushing processed fake meat vegetable burgers, which even a CNN nutritionist said these aren't any good. It's like 26 different ingredients.
And you know what I recommend? Nothing tastier than a polar bear steak. Mmm. We'll be right back.
Sure.
Don't even try to understand. Just find a place to make your stand and take it easy. I know love to say someone has taken my place. When times go bad.
Folks, welcome back. We're talking to the author of Green Fraud. Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. Mark Morano is the author of best-selling author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. The foreword's by Mark Stein. Mark, you've been around this world for a while. Most Americans, you know, they're trying to live their lives. They care about the environment. You know, we all care about these things. What is it that has made folks like AOC just, you know, speed off of the cliff? Because some of the things that they're suggesting, everyone knows it's crazy. So who's buying into this? How is it that Biden is buying into this?
Well, it's become a mantra of a progressive Democratic Party. You have to be all in on the climate agenda. There's no way any major Democratic candidate for president, any senator, congressman could ever dissent on this. This isn't the old days. The 30 years ago, you had the pro-life Democrats on this. There's no big tent on climate or energy on the Democratic Party. So they're all in lockstep. And the most devastating thing about this is during Trump's 2019, the second year of Trump's presidency, with his policies, we achieved for the first time since 1952, when Harry S. Truman was president, American energy dominance, more energy exports than imports, less energy consumption than production. In other words, we were producing more. We were the world's largest oil and gas producer. We were booming. No more need for endless wars in the Middle East. No more need for oil from Venezuela, the Middle East. No way to rely on Russia. Don't have to rely on it. Now, because the Green New Deal, solar panel, windmills, and electric car batteries, we're going to be relying on Chinese rare earth mining using slave labor in China, and also human rights violations of Chinese-owned mines in Africa. It's a lose-lose-lose all the way across from America, which makes it a love for the progressive agenda because it harms America. And this is what a lockdown was nothing but a government-enforced recession, depression, and this is where they want to go forward with the climate. They actually call for planned recessions to fight global warming.
Planned recessions.
To keep emissions down, yes.
This is, I mean, look, if we ever wanted a picture of fundamentally anti-American government, in other words, we're talking about not we the people, but we're talking about a coterie of globalist oligarchs determining policy for everyone. How is this even possible that we could care about what's going on at Davos or in the minds of some of these out of touch zillionaires, or Greta Thunberg? God bless her. I feel sorry for that young woman. She's being used by her elders. How does it happen, I guess, that we don't have more robust pushback from conservatives in the United States Senate and Congress?
That's a sore subject. Just last month in May, or I guess 2 months ago now, May of 2021, the Republican leadership in the House, led by Kevin McCarthy, these are the people standing between fascism and socialism and Marxism being opposed. You know what their message on climate was, Eric?
Yeah.
Climate change is a problem and we need a solution. But the Green New Deal has gone too far. We're going to be supporting carbon capture and we're going to plant trees and all this mealy mally Green New Deal light nonsense. This is who we have on Capitol Hill fighting the greatest threat to our liberty today, you know, next to COVID.
Kevin McCarthy is going to get thrown out on his tuchus.
I hope so.
Oh, my God. Listen, the idea that some of these folks are theoretically our leaders, ostensibly, technically our leaders, they need to be thrown out. We need people willing to speak the truth, who really care about the little guy. We don't have them in Washington. I mean, we've got a handful of them. But when I hear about people like Kevin McCarthy and these others, they really, I would say ultimately they're responsible. I can't blame AOC. She's, you know, Curtis Sliwa calls her all out crazy. I can hardly blame her. She's a kid. I don't know what she's doing. I blame any Republicans who don't stand up to this with everything that's in them. They are the ones that should be targeted. They should be primaried. They are destroying this nation. They are destroying the nation. They're the last line of defense, and they're cowards.
I've always said my problem isn't with AOC or the Chuck Schumers or the Joe Bidens. Our problem is with the people who are supposed to be defending the side of science and freedom and its Republican Party. And I worked in the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee during Obama's first term. And I saw firsthand where, you know, Republican senators from, you know, from the Midwest, well, we don't want to be seen as against the environment. We're not going to challenge any of the scientists. We're just going to say it costs too much. And I was like, wait a minute. So you're telling me people are saying we face an existential threat, we're doomed, but Republicans' answer to that is no, we don't. You bastardize the science. You don't have any debt. Is well, it just costs too much. You know, so we face doom. We're all going to die. But you know what? The solution is too bad. We can't do anything. No, you go after it, and you say you go after the entire premise. Number one, you don't see the narrative, and you show that even if we face the climate catastrophe, the Green New Deal would mean we're all doomed. We would all be dead if we actually face it. You would do the opposite of what the Green New Deal calls for. You would not want a top-down Marxist plan that regulated every aspect. You would want the opposite: free market, innovation, technological advancement, and economic growth. The wealthiest economies have the cleanest environment. So it's exactly opposite. Instead, Republicans, climate change is a problem, and we're going to address it too, and we're not going to be as heavy-handed.
By the way, that was a creepy impression of Mitch McConnell. I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you even did that. That was creepy, man. That was Frank Gorshin level impression of Mitch McConnell.
My point is, I hate Republicans in Washington right now. We are not led by anyone who's going to help us fight any of these battles. I'm sorry. Our leadership there is – there's a lot of great congressmen. And I used to work for Senator Inhofe. There's some great senators, but they're not in the leadership, sadly.
Well, I just want to say throw the bums out. I just coined that phrase. You're welcome to it. Throw the bums out.
Yeah, I like
they
it.
Really are. They're far worse than any of the Democrats, because they have been elected to fight against this stuff, specifically by folks like us, and they're not doing it. They've abdicated their role. So when we become a socialist country, which God forbid that'll never happen, but they would be the ones to blame. Mitch McConnell, all the career politicians, they really are guilty. So I'm just grateful to folks like you, Mark, for writing books like this and standing up against this. Green Fraud is the book. Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think, by Mark Morano. Mark, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it.
That old wheel is gonna roll around once more. When it does, it will even up the score.
Don't be weak. As they sow, they will reap. Turn the other cheek and don't give
Larry, just a couple of minutes left with you. You and I are colleagues on Salem Radio. We're both doing a fundraiser for Food for the Poor. Before I remind people to give to your campaign, which I hope they will. Tell us a little bit about Food for the Poor, because honestly, this is a huge thing that we do every few months. What is your experience with them?
Well, they're a great organization. The money gets down to the intended beneficiary in percentages far higher than the average charity. I've gone down to Guatemala with Food for the Poor. I've actually seen Angel Aloma, the longtime executive director, in action. It's a great organization. We've raised millions of dollars through Salem for Food for the Poor. They primarily assist countries like Haiti and like Guatemala. Haiti is the poorest country, as you know, in the Western Hemisphere. The average Haitian lives on less than a dollar a day. And so we've been saving lives. We've been making people not only saving lives and giving people food, we've also been helping them become far more self-sufficient, helping the farmers become far more effective to grow more things. And so it's an organization that I really, really, really love. So if you can throw something in the tip jar for Food for the Poor, that would be absolutely great.
Well, I just should tell people, go to my website, the radio website, MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com, and you'll see the banner there. And if you have anything left over, you want to go to electelder.com. Larry, I'm serious. If you're not elected governor of California, it's lights out. it's game over. Right. Caitlyn Jenner and John Cox, whatever, they're not you. I would say anybody but Gavin Newsom. But honestly, I know you. When you said you're throwing the hat in the ring, this is a very big deal. People need to get behind you. So I'm sure anybody who can go to electelder.com or folks, tell your friends online to give anything, give a few bucks, because this is for everything. I don't think there is a state in the union that is on the edge of the cliff the way California is, Larry. I mean, it's a sign of health that people have decided to recall Gavin Newsom, is it not? That's pretty dramatic.
I think so. It's a state that has supermajorities in the lower chamber, the assembly, and a supermajority of Democrats in the upper chamber, the Senate. If this man can get toppled, it gives hope for all the other states around the country that something can be done about crime, about homelessness, about the outrageous cost of living, and about the way this man completely ignored science and slapped down this state in a way more severe than any of the other governors, while ignoring the very mandates himself. People are had it. They're fed up. And I think it sends a message around the country. Gavin Newsom did say something I agreed with. He said, if I get toppled, it'll be a message to the Democrat Party. Let's send that message to the Democratic Party that we've had it. Electelder.com.
Well, but isn't it true, though? I mean, I think that things had to get this bad for a state even like California to say this is no longer working. It's kind of funny for a while. People always joke about California. But we're at a point now where people's lives are being destroyed. Businesses are being destroyed. Obviously, tons of people are leaving the state of California. It's going to be in free fall, and they're going to be looking to the federal government to bail them out. I think that apart from you leading that state, I don't see that it's going to end well.
You know, and our energy and water infrastructure has not been significantly added to since the 1970s, when the state population was 50% what it is. That's why we're having water shortages and rolling brownouts. And we ought not be having that in a state that's right next to the Pacific Ocean. With all these brainiacs in Silicon Valley, we should be able to innovate ourselves out of any problem that we're having. And I want to restore that kind of hope and optimism to California.
Well, Larry, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for stepping up. Our country needs folks like you to step up sacrificially to do what is right. Our best days are ahead. But, folks, you got to get behind folks like Larry Elder. Go to electelder.com. Larry, my friend, God bless you. Thank you so much.
God bless, Eric. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.